Okay, thank you very much. My name is Danelle Stevens. I work at Portland State University, and I've been there almost 20 years. And one of the things that I do at Portland State, I am the faculty in residence for academic writing to support faculty as they become more productive and support them. I sort of think of writing as a text problem, but also a context problem. And so the program that we have is called Jumpstart Academic Writing. We have about 40 faculty who are involved, and it's been going on for about 2 years now, and it's been very successful. This is actually one of the activities or one of the sessions that I do with faculty on selecting a journal, on how you select a journal for publication. So I thought that I would do a session today with you folks and find out what you already know about selecting a journal for publication so we can share the wealth, but also to give you some ideas about successful strategies that will help you get that article, that journal article published and out the door for you. So I will start. Come on in. Okay, everybody's getting settled. You have in front of you the PowerPoint slides. They're a little small print for some people, but at least it'll help you move along through the presentation. Take some notes if you want. I will have another handout for you a little bit later. Also, I'll point out that some of these are two-sided and some of them are single-sided. So don't feel that you've not gotten something because somebody has this one piece of paper and some people have two pieces of paper, okay? Great. The objectives are to learn about recommended and non-recommended outlets for publication and to understand the structure of the genre which is academic journal. What is an academic journal and what makes it an academic journal? And evaluate the array of options for selection of a journal and then know the steps to take to kick that journal article out the door. And the agenda, I've divided the content that I'm going to talk about in two parts. One is what you need to know about journals, and then what you can do or you need to do to further journal publication process for you. And what you need to know, we'll do what is called a KWL. Some of you may know that if you're in public school teaching, but it's what do you know, what do you want to know, what have you learned? KWL is just a process of eliciting from you the kinds of things that you already know about academic writing, about journals, publishing in a journal. And then we will also talk about what you might want to know so that I can sort of shape what I'm doing today in response to what your needs are. And then what you need to do, and I have a little quiz for you, a true-false quiz about the submission process, which we'll take, and then we'll talk about some of the myths of the submission process. And I've been investigating that for a while, and I've learned quite a bit from different editors, of journal editors, about what works and what is published and what isn't published. And then we'll talk about the typology that I've made up, which is stretch, reach, and fall back journals, which is a way to think about publishing your journals and trying to figure out which is the kind of target you want. And then we'll do what is called a text structure analysis, or at least discuss that. So for number one, what do you know already about journal submission? And if you could just take a little piece of paper and write down a couple of things that you already know about submitting to a journal. Things that make sense to you. Now, just to get you to sort of talk to each other a little bit and get to know each other, would you just turn to someone close to you and pick out one of those items that you wrote down and see if you have some commonalities with the person next to you? Okay, let's hear from you now and hear just a couple of things that struck you as you were talking to your colleagues in the room here about journal submission process or journal submission. What do you know at this point? Thoughts? Volunteers? Yes, sir.
It's a very sobering process.
All right.
Not
Right. It is a sobering process, and it is not for the thin skin. And I'm going to talk about that tomorrow in a roundtable, too. How do you handle rejection? It's an awful word, too, isn't it? It's you're rejected. You know, it's really kind of, that's hard too, yeah. So you're saying that you really need to know the journal well, know what kind of, do they accept empirical studies or qualitative studies, and what is their, I heard someone over here, you said the purpose of the journal. Okay. Match submission with journal purpose. Okay. I'm going to abbreviate J for journal. Okay. Anything else that you feel you have learned in the process? Go ahead.
Review the journal's previous volumes to see, you know, what's been published and what it looks like, and to see if you're a good match or have something similar to what they're publishing.
Review the journal's previous volumes and to see if there is a match. Right. It's a good idea.
I really like if you cite from their journal. That's what I'm finding from, you know, reviewers' comments. But, I mean, I don't know. I've just noticed that. I've also noticed they vary greatly in their response times. I mean, I had one that took 7 months and one that took 2 weeks. And it could be time of year, summer versus, you know, the beginning of spring. So it's something to keep in mind when you're trying to get things out, I think, is timing when you're submitting things. But,
that they like it if you cite from their journal in the citation list, and that is true. And you may think it's manipulative to do that, but they tell you to, partly because you are part of that conversation. A journal, you know, journal article is part of an academic conversation. You're entering the conversation, and those are the people that are talking about it on that journal, and that matches with the idea of making sure the purpose matches. So, and there also is various lengths of review time. Okay, I'll take one more, and then I'll start with asking.
We talked about the submission process, and some journals use an automated management system that you need to be familiar with, or some just take submissions by sending an email to the editor. And also, if you do use the automated management system, it's better to prepare your cover letter in advance, because they ask you to paste it into a box, and the temptation is just to write something really quickly, which might not be a good idea. It's better to have a more formal letter prepared that you can submit to them.
Yeah, we submitted recently, and we needed to have certain things they wanted in that cover letter. And the most important thing was our name and our institution. It was the way to separate, to make the review blind. The rest of it was blind, but the cover letter contained all those. It really wasn't a real cover letter. It was more like a fancy title page or whatever you call it. But they had definitely rules about what you had to have in it. So I think what you're highlighting is the really, really important part of submitting, is to pay attention to the guidelines and the expectations.
I just submitted to a journal, and they asked for a cover letter, and I didn't know.
You didn't even know what was the
sheet.
What's supposed to go in there. So
they
didn't have it written down for you or told you. Right, right.
You could either attach it or type it in the box.
Right. And so I think many of them are using electronic submissions now. So getting everything together before you start the submission, you have to have little files of tables, little files of figures, little files of the text itself, another file maybe for the abstract. So it's almost like submitting to a big conference, like AERA, American Educational Research Association. You just have to have all the pieces so that when you submit, you can put them in. I mean, you can still delay the submission process, but it's just nice if you read all of that ahead of time.
Did they ever tell you what to put in the cover letter,
What should you put?
I would write the editor. I would email the editor.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll talk about building a relationship with the editor. And so we learned some things. So what questions do you have? I'll just take a couple of questions. What questions do you have about the journal submission process? Yes.
Large journal like AERA versus a smaller journal?
We're going to talk about that. That's okay. A good question. Very good question. And that falls into that stretch, reach, fall back category. My little typology, you know. You have to, there are really levels of quality of the journals. It depends on your institution, what your institution values, but my institution, it's almost like a publication. It's a publication. It's a publication. It's a comprehensive, urban comprehensive university. It's not a research one. So they aren't as agitated that you have to have this high level of the stretch ones. Yeah. Okay, other questions?
Really would value knowing how to build a relationship with an editor. You know,
okay.
What's appropriate to say in emails.
Okay, great. All right, how to build a relationship with an editor. All right, anybody else? Any other questions? 1, 2. All right, let's go. Let's just get on with it. All right. First of all, what do you need to know? One of the things you need to know is to think about what kind of journal you wish to submit to. And also, what are the expectations of your institutions? It isn't usually for promotion and tenure in most institutions, and for the gold standard is a peer-reviewed, blind-reviewed journal. It's not a newspaper article. Even conference proceedings, you'll have to talk to the people in your unit, in your discipline, if those are of value. But the gold standard really is the peer-reviewed, blind-reviewed journal. Now, there are an array of those, however. So it's not all of them are like the hardest to get into. Let's look at the details. First of all, there's regional journals. Like there's, I know in education, there's one called the Asia Pacific Journal of Education. It's a smaller journal. It has a smaller audience. It's still peer-reviewed, blind-reviewed. And it's in the early years, they're easier to get into. Those are much easier to get into than the American Educational Research Journal or Sociology Education or some of those big journals. Newer journals are also a good venue for getting publications, getting that volume of publications. Newer journals are seeking submissions. And so you see it, and how do you know if a journal's new or not? Usually, a journal, it has, the structure of a journal is there is the title, and then there's a volume number, and then there is an issue number. The title of the journal, now you might have, let's say, Teaching Sociology, I think it's probably 33. That is the title of that journal, and that is the volume number. That is the year. That is how many years that journal has been published. So that will give, if it's a number one on the volume number, then that's volume one. And what happens at the end of the year, it might have issue number one, and it'll start with page one, issue two, issue three, issue four, 1 year, and it ends up, this is page 343, right? It's continuously numbered. And then it's put together in this volume. And the title of that volume, I always have a hard time with my students with APA because they never italicize the volume number. But that's actually the name of that book that's put together as an issue number. So those issue numbers are bound together and they make that volume. And the reason they do that is for recency. They could do a volume at the end of the year, but they're trying to get things out all year long as they come out, and you don't want to wait till the end of the year. So they have these other issues. The other thing to know about the structure of this is that sometimes what you should look for is their special editions, special issues. Like there might be an issue on doctoral education. In one of the journals that I publish in, Journal of Further and Higher Education, there might be one that's just on doctoral education. So you should be looking for, you can read, like you were saying, about paying attention to the volumes, paying attention to the journal. There might be a special issue that is just one of these. And it may have an editor that is not the regular editor, the executive editor, which is the faculty editor. So it's a volume number, issue number, made into a volume. And so it's good to be thinking about your publication will go into one of those issues. And it will come out. And if there's a special issue, that's one of the reasons you want to write the editor about what you're doing, because they may have a special issue coming out on that topic soon. And they may want your piece, or they may have it filled and say, we're not going to do that topic for another 2 or 3 years. Why don't you go to this journal? So it's really good. Don't be shy about writing the executive editor of a journal and telling them, sending them an abstract of your work and telling them why your work is valuable. There's some protocols you can use in writing to them. But the recommended journals are, for instance, your regional journals like the Asian Pacific Journal. Do you have some of those in your fields, different regional journals like Southern Journal of Rural America or something like that? Newer journals, interdisciplinary journals are often easier. And then subject area journals. Like I'm on the editorial board of the journal called Reflective Practice. And so that's really a field, Reflective Practice. It's not, or you might be in the field of medical education. Those are in a field. Now, the discipline, like American Educational Research Journal, is across all the fields in education. And it's a big journal, and it's very hard to get in. But field-specific, reading education, sociology teaching, those kinds of things, journals are a little less hard to get into. And they also tell your committee that you are working in the field. You're getting known in your field by publishing in those journals. So those become good places for you to do that. The genre of academic journals, the number of journals, there's 22,000 academic journals. In education, there's 2,500 academic journals. There are many journals. You may think that the field is very narrow, but it's actually there's a lot of journals out there, and there are a lot of different levels of, like I said, there's regional, and then there's disciplinary, et cetera. The king coin of the realm is they're refereed, they're blind reviewed. I just went over volume numbers and issues and the page numbering. There is an editorial board. Now, today, because we have this electronic, in fact, one of the librarians says, we have a fire hose of journal articles that we can get on any topic. I mean, we can just get a ton of articles, which presents a different kind of problem these days. But the editorial board, one of my colleagues at Portland State said, what he does is he looks at the editorial board of a journal, which you can get online, and then he looks to see if he has cited any of those people in his literature review. And that's a strategy. We might as well be strategic and clever about this. And so look at the editorial board and see if you can cite some of those people or one of those people in your work. More than likely, if you found the right journal, one person in there has done some work in that area, if it's a match for your subject area. And I mentioned theme issues. In the early years, before you even before you get a tenure-track job, or even in your early years in a tenure-track job. One of the easiest ways to start publishing is book reviews. And there's it's a pretty set text structure. I can teach you in 5 minutes how to do a good book review. And I get my doctoral students to do it all the time.
Okay. because it's something I was interested in, but I didn't really understand how to start. But you, I can talk to you.
You can talk to me about it. It's really easy to do. And I'd get my doctoral students to do it. I probably had 125 doctoral students do book reviews at Portland State because I show them the strategy, the patterns that you have to look for, and just have them match that. And it's really pretty easy to do. And editors want you to review books because they need people to do those reviews. It's a good entry point. Many promotion and tenure committees go, well, book reviews, But what I was chair of the promotion and tenure committee for a couple of times, and I'm looking for a pattern in somebody's work. I'm not looking for the single star thing. I'm looking for a pattern in their performance, in their getting their ideas out there. They're reviewing books. They're doing conferences. They're writing. They're staying in the pipeline. They're writing. They're thinking. They're producing. It's not a one-shot deal. It's part of how they see themselves in their work. And so that, to me, is more, and a book review would count. For me, it's one thing along the way, and it's easy to do, and I can teach you in 5 minutes. Maybe I have to do a roundtable on that next year.
You
can call me. Okay, so that's kind of the knowledge part, and what I'd like you to do now is going to give you a little true and false quiz. All right? So, if you look up here, can you read those pretty well? So there's six of them. Okay, so let's go through these. Talking to others will help in identifying key journals. Absolutely, yes. You should be talking to your peers. You should be talking to other professors. You can go to the librarians. We have an education librarian at Portland State. I don't know if you have people like that on your campus that are discipline specific, but they'll know a lot about journals as well, and they can help you identify some journals. And so it is good to talk to those folks, talk to your colleagues, I have some other stuff I'll tell you in the next slides, but yes, talking to others is true. You should help it, will help you. The second question was already answered, it is manipulative to cite journal articles in your reference list from the journal where you are submitting. What do you think? Wrong. Why is it wrong? So she said that it's about doing the reading, and it's about citing people that are in that conversation, really, right? And so it is not manipulative. In fact, when Joanne was here last year with me, submitted to the Reflected Practice, that journal, we looked at our reference list and we went, we didn't have anything. It was like we had one thing. So we went scurried and found like five or six, and there were a lot of good articles because they would write exactly what we were doing. So it is not manipulative. In fact, it is very strategic to cite that journal. The journal wants to be cited. Right? Because that gives them impact factors and those other things. So you should cite, I'd say four or five references from that journal. I mean, it's not a bad thing, 3 to 5, it's not too many, and it shows that you're reading the journal. And you're also getting a sense of the structure of the articles in the journal. Editors do not want to hear from authors before they submit the manuscript. False. Generally, some editors will not respond. Don't worry about that. But do think about emailing the editor, finding out the name of the editor from the publisher. And there's two kinds of editors, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but the managing editor and the executive editor. But the one you probably want most from is the executive editor, who's the faculty editor. And when you submit an article to a journal, that is the person that makes the decision about whether that journal article is sent out for review. If you get it back, it didn't pass his muster. He or she said, nope, doesn't match the journal. I don't want to send it out to review, and will not send it out to reviewers. So if it made it through the editor, you're doing what you've already made the first hurdle, which is great. They want to hear from you, part, as I said earlier, because it's an opportunity for them to know that this article is coming. I was submitted, I emailed an editor, and I said, well, I'm writing this article, and would you be interested in it? And he said, oh, yes, we'd be very interested in that article. Well, I kind of put it on the back burner, and I didn't think about it. And about 2 months later, I get a note from him, are you going to send in that article? And I went, yes, yes. So sometimes it works that way, too. You know, they're anticipating your... I know there's that person. They have to fill a volume with articles. You know, they have to... And there's... So they're in their mind. They're thinking about it. Yeah.
If you're in the middle of revising or... If you're working on trying to get your article ready for submission, but it's not ready yet... When in that process would I email the editor? Would I wait till it's ready, or would I do it while I'm still in the process?
Do it while you're in the process. Joanne and I wrote to this editor in Reflected Practice, and we said, well, we have an article on journal keeping, on how to keep a journal, et cetera. Would you be interested in it? And he said, oh, we've had enough articles, unless you have a different slant. And so we wrote him back and said, well, we are doing, it's on how faculty use journals in their professional life. And he said, oh, okay, I'm interested in that. So it also is motivating. It gets you through finishing it up and polishing it. If you get a response, yeah, I'd be interested in reading that. They won't say they're going to publish it, of course, but they will say, I'd be interested in reading that. I think that will add to our journal. Oh, we have a special issue coming up next year. Ah, yeah, I think that would fit in well. So that building that relationship is really helpful, very helpful. Don't be shy about it. And if they say no, they don't respond, they don't respond. You know, just don't worry about it. But often they will. Journals generally take about 3 months to review your manuscript and give feedback. That's the norm. That's the expectation. They're much more on reviewers. Are any of you reviewers for journals? Yeah. They're much more on top of you now than they used to be. After a month, they want it back in a month. I go, month? And so now they're much, because of electronic submissions, they can, and they also have you on an automatic reminder system, I found out. When I was late. They send you a reminder. Have you turned in your manuscript? Have you turned in your review? Have you turned in your... So they're better. But after 3 months, if you don't hear anything after 3 months, email the editor and say, what is the status of my manuscript? If it goes longer than 4 months, 5 months, you should consider pulling it or finding out why. They may be changing their editorial board. They may be, having publication problems. I don't know, but there may be a reason why there's a delay. But if they're just not getting it reviewed, then you can consider pulling it. But you can only submit to one journal at a time. That is the cardinal rule. Never submit the same manuscript to two or three journals. One journal, and that's why you have to be on top of it for the 3 months. The end of 3 months, you email them. And it's very polite. What is the status of my manuscript? I want to know now. But, you just ask them the status. That's good. Okay. A revise and a resubmit is really a rejection and should be ignored. False, right. A revise and resubmit is what? A what? An invitation, exactly. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about how you handle that in my little roundtable and some of the strategies you can use so it's not so devastating. And it's really an invitation. And I had a doctoral student who thought it was terrible. He'd put in a book review, and he just didn't get, they didn't want it. And then I said, well, let's read what the editor wrote, which he hadn't read. And the editor was interested in it, but he just, read the first sentence or so, and he just got depressed and didn't read the rest of it. So make sure you read the whole thing, because a revise and resubmit is not a rejection. It is a revise and resubmit. Please send it in again. Send it in again. Because one journal rejected your article, you should spend a significant amount of time rewriting and send it out again. What do you think? You said true.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of nuances that I react to. I mean, if I were to rewrite it,
you know, I think it's important that just because you get a rejection from one journal article or journal, I can't believe that should set the course for that particular article.
That's right.
And so maybe you do need to make some changes to reassess what you need to do better, but I don't think it should end because one journal rejects you.
Exactly, exactly. Any other thoughts?
Just to build on what you were saying, was really, I think there's a skill in picking out what's useful feedback and what's not. I went to a really high-end journal, and they're the ones that took forever, but their editorial board changed. That original editor was interested, and then I saw it change, and they took 7 months. Long story. But it was an extensive review, which had some really good points. So I knew I couldn't submit back to them because I had rejected it, but it had very, very useful feedback,
yeah.
And some not. And so I took it to make it stronger and then send it out again. And
got it published.
It's in a revisor submit right now.
Yay! Yay, good.
Yeah,
everybody. Great.
An invitation.
An invitation.
But it was, I mean, I did do some extensive revisions. So
great.
Anyway,
great. Yeah. Great. So it is not, I would have a list inside a folder of the journals I'm going to send it to. And after I have three journals listed and I send it to the first one, I get a rejection. I take the big ideas from the feedback, but not too much time. Not too much time. Because you've got to keep it in the system and make a few changes and send it to the second journal on your list as quickly as possible. Say a couple of weeks. Don't sit on it and get it out again. Because there's people review differently. If you've reviewed at all, you know that some people, it will vary a lot in their feedback and the person who's doing the reviewing. So I think don't spend a significant amount of time rewriting at all. I would take the big ideas, put those in, but then get it out again. And then you'll get more feedback, which is good. Yeah.
Journal and take it to the other journal and send it. You mean, for instance...
Don't send the points, but take those points and use them to slightly revise your paper,
right,
and send it to another journal.
But not to the same journal.
Not to the same journal, no. If it's rejected, not a revised submit, resubmit.
But sometimes, you know, in the beginning, they say some points without saying rejection. And then after you submit, you know, you revise it, and then you send it back to them, and then the second time they reject it. So I take all these and then send it to another journal?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
thank
be
you.
Brave. There's okay. a journal out there. There's lots of journals. There really are, and they're
right.
pretty different in many ways. And
thank
I'm going
you.
To show you something in a little bit, a strategy in a little bit that will help you distinguish what is the essence, what is that journal asking you to do. Yes?
Small point. In highly competitive scientific fields, you occasionally will have a reviewer who is unscrupulous, who will read an excellent paper, reject it, and then go publish it himself. This is something to look out for, and another reason to increase the turnover or shorten the turnover time so you can still get it in print before an unscrupulous person grabs it.
Mm-hmm. That's when we need TAA lawyers, right? Because that's terribly, terrible.
But it's problematic when you've got a blind reviewer. And you don't
Right. But you do have an editor. The editor knows who the reviewers are, but you don't. And so I've actually never heard that happen in my field, which is education or in social sciences, but I can imagine it happens. And it's not that I, sometimes when I'm reviewing, and that's something you volunteer to do, is you see a new journal, there's a new journal called Teaching and Inquiry. I went to a conference and I said, oh, I'd like to be a reviewer for you. You know, you're a new journal, you need reviewers, I'd like to review for you. So get yourself out there and start reading, and sometimes what they send you, they have a great reference list. You know, you can mine that reference list from that article. That's helpful. So you're getting some more information that's helping you as a reviewer. So find out about journals. You have to take some action. First of all, talk to your peers, like I said. Second of all, go to the library, those that are still on the shelf, the journals, and look at the journals that are on the shelves in the library and talk to your librarian. Many of them aren't hard copy anymore, but go look at the journals. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of different kinds of journals out there. Review your own citations, as I said. When you have an article and you have your reference list, go down that list and look. That's how I found this journal on academic writing. This is a journal called the Journal of Further and Higher Education. Never heard of it, but I found I was citing it. It's from England, and they're interested in academic writing. They published many articles about academic writing. So that's where we submitted our article on academic writing. Join a professional association. Often they have journals that they publish or they give you if you like teaching mathematics in schools, or American Educational Research Association, which is my field, has journals. So have journals around you at home. We published an article in College Teaching last year, my colleagues and I, and the year before I published, I subscribed to the journal. It cost me $60. But guess what it gave me? I could see what the journal gave me some ideas about the structure of the articles in College Teaching and what kind of conversation the people are having in that journal. So it just helped me know the field. When I go to AERA, they have exhibits. Do you go to conferences that have exhibits? And do the exhibits have journals, sections where there are journals? I pick those up, those sample journals, bring them home, and look at them. Look at how they're structured. Look who's on the editorial board. AERA, American Educational Research Association, has a thing called journal talks, where the editors of journals come, sit at tables with their journals. The editors are there, and you can sit down and talk to the editor and say, are you interested in this kind of thing? Is that what this journal's about? So you actually have to become a student, in a way, of this whole process and gather data and start paying attention to what journals are out there and what gather journals and bring them home, look at them, go to the exhibits at big conferences. And tomorrow in my little roundtable I'm going to talk about, I got a list of the 10 top reasons why journal articles are rejected from the managing editor of the Routledge, of the Taylor and Francis journals, the managing editor of all their hundreds of journals. I got a list of the 10 top reasons why articles are rejected. And so try to gather information yourself. Talk to people, talk to editors if you know any, and search electronic databases. Put your keywords in an electronic database and look at what journals come up. You may not cite those, but look at the kind. So you're doing a little detective work here, trying to figure out who's having these conversations. What are the journals that are having the conversations about this topic, about my topic? And that's to use the variety of keywords in your searches. Evaluate academic journals for your work. And that's when I'd say identify stretch journals. Those are the ones, the really high-end journals, that would be, you knew if you got an article in that journal, you'd be tenured. You know, your life would be set, right? Those are stretch. Reach are within your reach. They're good journals. They're solid. They're peer-reviewed. And they are, you know, you can publish in those. I publish in mostly reach journals. And fallback are ones that you know that you will get published. It's a new journal. They'll want your article. And so you've got to evaluate the journals yourself as to how they match your career goals and your expectations.
My issue is identifying which, well, I know the stretch journals, but beyond that, I don't know the difference between reach and fallback. How do you identify that?
I would say talking to colleagues, going to conference. I mean, it's not, there, some people will do rankings, impact factor, and all of that. I don't do that. I mostly just look at the quality of the writing in the journals, look at the quality of the articles, and right now I'm going to give you a method of evaluating. Yes. And I have 15 minutes. Okay, great. And it's not an exact science is what I'm going to say. You know, and I think you'll have to just get the journal and look at it and look at the kinds of articles and look at how well they're structured. There's two pieces of paper there. The first one is something that will help you identify if your work, if how well this journal matches what you are producing. This is produced for social science journals, not humanities. This is what I call a text structure analysis. And I use this with faculty. I use this myself. Before you submit an article to any journal, I would do a TSA, text structure analysis. And this does not require you to necessarily read a lot of articles. What it requires you to analyze, what is the structure of the articles in this journal? So you take three articles from that journal, and this is something you can do to kind of evaluate that, and you look for, you're going to go down the page here, and you're going to evaluate, and usually you start with a 10-word gist. What's it about? Doctoral education, this article, this one article in this journal. Pick some three journal articles, recent articles, and you're going to analyze them, the characteristics and the structure of those articles, which means you're going to have the gist, so you can kind of remember what it's about, doctoral student writing groups, or what's your subject area? Public speaking and communication. How am I doing? Okay, good. Just wanted to know. that's the correct answer, too. Thank you. Anyway, the gist of public speaking and who is it? Is it a political speech? And what are the purposes of it? You just kind of get the general idea. You don't have to read the article, okay? Then you're going to look at the title. Some of the high-end journals in education have things like, you know, the effects of higher order questioning on adolescent cognitive processing during mathematics problem solving. Okay. All right. That's a very formal kind of title. It has all the nuts and bolts. It's everything that's in the article. You need to look at that for that journal. You need to figure out, are there titles that like that? Or are they sort of, go today, learn mathematics, higher order thinking, or, you know, you just kind of get a feel for what that journal, how that journal, the titles that make sense to that journal. And they are different. If you did this TSA with several different journals, you could get a feel. You're counting, we'll go down, and then you look at the abstract, if they have an abstract. Some of your fallback journals, like Educational Leadership or Kappen or Teaching Mathematics in the Middle School, they don't have an abstract. That tells you something. They have photographs. They have sidebars. They're for school principals, so they can read it fast, you know? They aren't a peer necessarily. They're editorial reviewed, but not peer reviewed. So you need to know the structure of the kinds of the journal that you're submitting to. Then you figure out if they have an abstract, how long it is, and then you can go. What about the purpose of the study? If it is a study, do they state it clearly? Well, if they state it within the first three paragraphs, you can better well be sure that when you send in an article, you better say your purpose statement within the first three paragraphs. You are matching what they expect. And that really helps your, I mean, it's not about content so much as it is about being strategic in submitting. Don't just submit, but match. Match what their expectations, and the TSA will help you do that. How many paragraphs do they spend on the introduction? I did a 5-page academic medicine education journal article yesterday with some faculty, and we did a TSA, this TSA with it. It virtually had no literature review. It really just had a little argument, and it had no literature review. It was very interesting. It was only 5 pages long, and it was about a writing group for academic medicine. So, but that would tell me that if I wanted to publish in that journal, I'd get a couple of those. How extensive does my literature review have to be? Probably not too extensive. You know, it's just I can get a feel for it. And usually when you do a TSA, most people go, "Oh, it's a journal article. The bar is so high, so high." But what the TSA does, it goes, "Huh, it's not so high. It's eye level. I can do that. I can write a 3-paragraph background on this topic. I can have 25 references. I don't have to have 150 references. 25 to 35 is about what most people have. You know, you're just kind of, does this sound like heresy to you?
No.
I hope not. It's really very powerful. And my faculty at Portland State say they would never send anything out now unless they did a TSA. They would never. They would always sit down and count the number of paragraphs. This is the kind of thing you can do at night when you're watching TV. You know, all you're doing is counting. How many paragraphs for the intro? How many paragraphs for the methods? How detailed are the methods? You're getting up to the balcony view and figuring out how these people in this one tribe, in a way, match what is their language. And this will help you do it. Like the academic medicine one we did, all of the references were journal articles. There were no books, no edited volumes. They were all journal articles. Ah, that's a clue. So kind of have to shape your content to whatever the expectations are of that journal. Okay. And write a query letter to the managing editor, which is mostly how long does it take to get manuscripts out to be reviewed? 5 minutes? Okay. And then the executive editor, there's some notes here that you can, the kinds of things that you can put in the letter to the executive editor. Just an email, you know. Keep it short. Tell them why your work is worthwhile. I've borrowed liberally on this topic, and if you are interested in this, from Wendy Belcher's book, particularly the writing, the editor, called Writing Your Journal Article in 12 Weeks. Do you know that book?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she has a very good chapter in there on journal publications, and she has sample query letters that you can use, too. So that Wendy Belcher's book is quite good. In fact, I'm taking a group of faculty through the 12-week program right now. We're chapter by chapter learning about the book. Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Does anybody have questions at this point? Yes, ma'am. Over here, I guess. Okay.
With the publications that one should try to avoid, I noticed conference proceedings. Are they not considered very
I think you need to check out conference proceedings in your institution.
Okay.
They're often not as, they may be peer-reviewed before you're submitting, but the actual proceeding itself is not peer-reviewed.
Okay.
So promotion and tenure committees kind of are a little, it depends on your discipline, a little nervous about those being real peer-reviewed, blind-reviewed. Yes. Here we go.
Jennifer?
Yeah.
How would you decide, especially if you're new to publishing, should I submit to that stretch journal or should I go for the reach? You know, like, how do I make that decision? Like, you know, like if I don't go for it, like, oh, could I have got
this? It's because it takes a while. You're new and it takes a while for things. I would not do stretch. I would wait, personally, for a couple of years, if at all. Lots of times for committees, it's volume. It's not necessarily that you're in the top journal, but it's that you've published. It's that pattern that they're looking for.
Sustainable.
And that you have a writing habit and a writing practice. And they can see that because you're publishing. You're getting your ideas out. You're testing your ideas. Any other questions?
Time for another one?
Yes, one more question. Okay.
Okay, so I know I'm not supposed to submit to two journals at once. I know that, but I'm still a little fuzzy on conference presentations versus submitting to journals. Like, conference presentations.
Well, you take what you... It's the pipeline. The round table at the conference... Then the conference paper presentation, then the publication.
So it's fine to go to present something at a conference that I haven't submitted.
You can still use it. You need to use that to write your paper, your conference presentation to write your paper. It's the pipeline of ideas. Plus, you're swimming in your ideas all the time when you put them out in the conference, and then you're talking to people. You're gathering. Yes, Richard.
There's been a lot of writing recently about predatory journals, journals that are created, you have to submit a fee to publish in them. They say they are peer-reviewed, but you really don't know that much about it. Would you say a few things about how to avoid those?
Well,
we actually have kind of a presentation on that later today.
Do we? Okay, good. Tomorrow. You're going to talk about
Jeff
that. Okay, great. Great, because... Promotion and tenure committees, no, period. And I don't know how to avoid them, but they don't want you to have to pay somebody to publish your work. That's just not acceptable in higher education promotion. And you don't want that anyway. You want a good, solid review. You want to get your ideas out there, and you want feedback, at least, and to grow your ideas in your garden of your wonderful thoughts.